2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inside Sources here on KSL News Radio. It's great to be with you today. I am Boyd Matheson, opinion editor at the Deseret News. And as we've been continuing our conversation, looking at how the pandemic and COVID-19 has impacted education across the board, we've been of particular interest in what's happening in terms of higher education and what's going on there. And fortunately, I reached out late this morning, timing was great. We were able to get Scott Pulsifer, who is the president of Western Governors University, just one of the most innovative places you can go that is really out in front. I think we're may have been the best program designed for a pandemic at Western Governors University. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Boyd, it's great to be with you. Thank you for that kind intro.
Oh, well, you you are doing some great things there at Western Governors University. And as I said, you're really out in front on so many things. But I wanted to get your perspective today on what has the pandemic done? What have you learned, or how has it expanded your vision? Many higher education organizations are saying, oh, hey, we've learned this, we've learned that. You were kind of ahead of the curve. So now what have you learned, and where does that push you next?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think one of the things that's probably broadly evident is that while we may have not been designed for a pandemic, it surely is heightening or emphasizing many of the differentiators that we have. And I think one thing maybe just simply to start with is that if you look across many sectors, whether it's education or retail or even healthcare and others, the pandemic is definitely emphasizing the strength and value of a technology-first mindset. Mm. You know, how do we really leverage technology to advance the interactions, the engagements, the value proposition that so many of the experiences that we have in our everyday life, and whether that's in shopping or whether that's even accessing medical care and attention or whether that's online banking, those same influences are absolutely true within education. And when you don't have the luxury of being in person, you start to recognize that, that there are many ways to have a more technology-led thinking and model that can really advance access and quality of learning as well. And so this scenario, or at least the COVID, is providing a catalyst for the digital-first thinking going forward. And how do we leverage all of the strengths and capabilities that a digital-first mindset can do in terms of enabling really what we would call a student-centered design? Mm-hmm. How do you design for a more flexible and personalized learning? How do you design for more real-time and effective faculty interaction with students rather than just content delivered as a recorded lecture? You know, how do you think about providing prompts and interventions even to faculty to so that they can reach out in a timely manner to help every single student who's trying to access learning to better their lives? One other thing, maybe just as a preface to continue the conversation, is what we recognize too is that education is going to be vitally important for many of the millions of individuals now who've been displaced because their prior job is currently on hiatus, and many of those jobs may not be able to go back to.
Right.
And so upskilling and reskilling is now more a part of the narrative than ever before. And so what is the role of higher education in that and making it possible for even those that are in their middle skill or 30s and 40s and acquiring the skills and capabilities they need for their next opportunity?
I think that's so vital. And we've posted on our KSL Inside Sources Facebook page a piece you wrote for Forbes magazine back in June I encourage all of our listeners to go give this a read. The title itself is very compelling. Forget Bitcoin. Skills are the currency of the future. And the thing I'd love to have you weigh in on, Scott, is you had this great framing of getting employers. You talk about this partnership between higher education and employers, and you talk about it in the context of skills and how it would take employers out of the human capital management business and put them in, and I love this, put them in the human potential business, the continuous process of learning and developing capability.
Yeah, the one thing we certainly believe in is that life is in many ways like a ladder. It is expected to be one of progress, of continual progress, is that you know, the first opportunity that one has is not going to be the last opportunity that one has, and that we expect that many individuals have to traverse an ever-increasing and expanding scope of capability and associated responsibility. And so that model really portends the need for more of a skills-based context. And what we really mean by that is that instead of simply a degree as the only value that we have in terms of signaling to the market as to something that I've completed, what increasingly is important is really not only the knowledge that you possess, but what are you able to do with that knowledge? And so where are you competent? What are the capabilities that you actually have demonstrated proficiency in? And there's simply this recognition that those skills and competencies, if you will, can be acquired through multiple different pathways. It's not only a degree. And so it's degree and others. And so a skills-based future really allows individuals to continually improve themselves, quite frankly. And as they improve themselves, they're acquiring new capability and capacity to, you know, to do things, and that affords them new opportunities. And the future is going to be one where employers are better able at defining those skills and competencies needed in the roles. And it's more about whether an individual possesses them, not how they acquired them. They could have gone to a college, they could have gone to an apprenticeship or paid internship, they could have even received it or acquired it through employer-provided training. So this skills-based model is much more aligned with the future of work. It's more equitable because it's not about how you acquire them, it's about whether you possess them. And so I think it's really going to shape how we think about the human potential, if you will, for the future, is that we're always improving our capacity for delivering value.
Yeah, oh, and I love that. It's not how or where you acquired them, it's that you actually possess them. And I think that's important. And this is clearly from your perspective and your governing philosophy, this is not a skills versus degree battle. It's really creating space and developing what I've always said is the most important thing could take out of any learning experience, and that is learning how to learn, the discipline of it, how you develop those skills and competencies. But more importantly is the love of it, because it's going to be that lifelong learning, lifelong skills acquisition that will probably be the differentiator for a lot of folks in their careers moving forward.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that also factors into our vision, even at WGU, is that it's not about only an individual's first opportunity. It's also about their next opportunity. And so how do we shape the future of WGU's offering, both the credentials that we offer, the access, and the individuals that we serve? You know, we have to think about those who are also seeking the new opportunities in their pathway and along their ladder of life, if you will. And so that's where you see WGU. We've invested more in even micro-credentials with our medical coding, medical assistant offering. We also have partnered with edX in introducing our IT framework certification and credential. The ability to acquire the ongoing learning that's necessary for an individual to continually progress through their life. And it isn't a degree or skill. Right. In fact, a skills-based future really allows even degrees to be better articulated in the context of what employers in the workforce need. Mm. Whereas today, it's a rather imperfect signaling. You know, if you doubt it, just think of all those really intensive interviewing processes that employers have to try to assess whether or not the graduates are ready for the work that they need them to do. And so,
great, great stuff. Scott Pulsifer, president of Western Governors University, doing some great innovation skills. And really preparing everyone for the future in a unique way. And again, I encourage everyone to go read his article from Forbes magazine on our Facebook page today as well. Scott, thanks for carving out time for us. Great insight. Appreciate your leadership and innovation when it comes to learning and skills development.
Thank you so much, Boyd. Have a great day.
All right. We're going to go ahead and step aside for bottom of the hour news. When we come back, we're going to go to Washington, D.C. Our good friend James Wallner is going to join us, weighing in what's going on in Congress. Can they get anything done? We'll find out next.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.